Welcome to New World Notes, a series that explores the gap between the America we want and the America they're trying to make us settle for, and how we the people can reestablish our commonwealth and reclaim our democracy. Edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. And today we'll focus on and have a chat with one of Southern New England's more interesting political and social commentators, comedian Jimmy Tingle. As I mentioned from time to time, about a dozen years ago, I chucked the television set. When I say this, it always angers the Republicans, astounds the Democrats, and people further to the left say, "What took you so long?" Okay, I'm a slow learner. Turns out there was one or two interesting things I missed, though, one of which is Jimmy Tingle. For 30 years or so, he's been a comedian based in nearby Cambridge, Massachusetts. His live performances in the Boston area have gotten very good reviews, and through appearances in some fairly classy TV shows and documentaries, he's known around the country and in the UK. I won't go through his long resume, but you may have seen him on CBS's 60 Minutes 2. For 2 years, he filled the humorous commentator slot, filled elsewhere by the likes of Andy Rooney. To me, Andy Rooney is just Rush Limbaugh with a sense of humor and without the OxyContin. You'd be glad to hear that Jimmy Tingle is not Andy Rooney. Like Senator John Curry, Jimmy Tingle is a Roman Catholic Massachusetts liberal Democrat. In the 2004 presidential campaign, Curry never uttered any of those five words. Tingle, though, has come out of the closet and is now quite open about his, unusual preferences. Okay, you say, admitting to being a liberal Democrat. That's courageous. But is he funny? You be the judge. Listen on, then if you like, check him out further at www.jimmytingle.com. Right now, we'll alternate between samples of his new CD, Jimmy Tingle for President, and a phone conversation Jimmy and I had on March 19. Thanks to Ruth, a listener of the show from Northeast Connecticut, for bringing this guy to my attention. Here's Jimmy.
And being in business informed me about my healthcare policy, because you can't just depend on the marketplace for things like healthcare. The insurance companies are partially responsible for the healthcare crisis for one very simple fundamental reason. You ready for this? They don't want to cover sick people. That's not an afterthought. That's the premise. If you can, avoid the sick. They don't want to cover sick people. What are you doing in the healthcare business? You want to deal with healthy people? Fine. Buy a health club. And it's not just the health insurance industry. Because of the risk involved, for example, if you live near the ocean, it's very difficult to get flood insurance. Why? Could be a flood. Now, if you live in the desert, you can get all the flood insurance you want. You just can't get sunstroke insurance. A lot of sun could have a stroke. Now, if you live in a cave, you can get all the sunstroke insurance you want. You just can't get fruit bat insurance. You could be in a cave, middle of the night, go, "You know, I can't really sleep. Maybe I'll paint something on one of the walls for future generations." So you're over there, maybe painting a woolly mammoth or something, you know, out of nowhere, fruit bat. Whack! Insurance won't cover that. How would they like it if everybody in our society had the same attitude toward them? You know, the president of the insurance company calls up the police department. "Hello, police? Yes? Please help. There's a bunch of disgruntled patients in front of the insurance company. They're hurling crutches and wheelchairs at the building. They're all upset because we cut off their insurance. Please help." "Geez, we'd love to help you, sir, but we only deal with the well-behaved."
Your current performance, Laughter Stimulus Plan. Tell us a bit about what that is all about.
Sure. That's just an evening out of humor for people, where I'm talking about the social problems and the issues of the day and the politics of the day, and I'm having fun with it. I'm taking certain themes and pieces out of my previous show, Jimmy Tingle for President, and just updating them and incorporating them into this live concert show that I've been doing. It's just a lot of fun. It's just an evening with Jimmy Tingle. It's Jimmy Tingle in concert. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds like fun.
Yes. And where people are just bummed out right now with the economy, you know, it's a fun way to get out and just address these issues through humor.
Mm-hmm. I noticed on your website at the very top, you describe yourself as stand-up comic, social and political humorist, actor, writer, and activist.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we start there? What gets you active, and how does your humor fit into your activist social concerns? What issues are you particularly engaged in?
Well, for example, I always get calls from groups who are trying to do fundraisers, or it's a nonprofit doing an event, and they're looking for some humor. And I end up at these events all the time. So that's one element of my activism, whether it's health care or substance abuse issues or, you know, educational issues or whatever it is. People are always trying to raise money. They're always trying to raise funds and awareness, and they want to have fun doing it. So for the last 25 years, I've been called on. People just call me up and ask me if I can help. And I try to do what I can do where I can. And that's one form of activism. The other form that I've been involved in, and this is just basically people get into trouble all the time. You know, unexpected and sudden deaths and sicknesses. And so growing up in this area in Boston, over the years we've had a lot of those situations where family or friends have gotten sick, and we'll put up together a fundraiser and just try to help them out, basically. So the activism is on a personal level. It's on a political level. And I'm not a member of any particular group or political party. I'm not with MoveOn.org or anything. So I just do it on my own.
Mm-hmm. Is your comedy part of the activism? I understand how one way in which you're being an activist is you're showing up and entertaining the people and helping to raise funds. Mm-hmm. Is the humor itself part of the activism? Are you changing people? Are you shaping opinions?
Well, the humor is oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes is a point to it. And as you listen to the CD, you'll see points about, I don't know, national defense, or you'll see points about health care,
mm-hmm.
or you'll see points about alcohol and drug abuse, things like this. So the humor usually has some sort of a point of view. Not always, but a lot of times. Sometimes it's just silly, and sometimes it's just really sarcastic, like in my education plan. But even in my education plan, there's an underlying theme of the family involvement and also putting resources to help in the families of people who don't come from an educated background or whose parents don't stress, for example, reading or education in the home. Same thing with immigration issues, looking at immigrants as modern-day pilgrims, but still recognizing the need for accountability in the country, to know who's in the country and what they're doing here for the sake of the immigrants, for the sake of the society at large.
Mm-hmm.
So the material is both. It's both. I try to be both entertaining, but usually it has a point of view in it.
Let's stop for a second and hear some of what candidate Tingle had to say about immigration. This is from the new CD, Jimmy Tingle for President. After that, a quick preliminary look at religion.
There's still people coming to this country to better themselves, for freedom, for political freedom, for religious freedom, for economic freedom. It's a very controversial issue. The Senate voted to build a 700-mile fence across the border with Mexico. Now, a couple of problems. With the 700-mile fence across the Mexican border. First problem, the border with Mexico is 1,900 miles long. Okay. Now, I'm not an expert on immigration, but I would surmise that people fleeing abject poverty will go around the fence. And when you think of the risk and the courage it takes and the perseverance to even come to this country, are they not on a certain level modern-day pilgrims? Think about this. Sneaking into a country to work. That's incredible. That's like somebody breaking into your house to clean it. But even as pro-immigration as I am, I still want accountability in the country. Because the anti-immigration people say the immigrants are taking more from the country than they're bringing to the table. Now, the pro-immigration people say, no, they're bringing more to the table than they take. Under a Tingle administration, I will mandate a debit card. A debit card for all non-citizens to be used in every public and private transaction. At the end of the month, you just add it up. To see who has taken what from whom. Okay, sir, let's see. You've been here for 30 days. What have you taken from our society? Says here that use the public streets, use the public sidewalks, use the public restrooms, use the public transportation. Your children are going to public schools. And when you got hurt running across the border, sir, you in fact used the public emergency room. Yes, you did, sir. You did. Sir, those are our crutches. Okay, granted, they were made in Mexico, but they're ours now. Now, let's see what have you brought to the table. Says here that you painted 3 houses, you cleaned 13 yards, your wife babysat 14 families, you started a landscape business, you wrote a computer software program. And according to our record, sir, it says here you pitched 2 innings in the World Series. We owe you $4 million. But my point is this, and this is consistent with our values as people, that it's in the Bible. It's right in the Bible. Heal the sick. Okay. Heal the sick. House the homeless. Okay. It's right in the Bible. Feed the naked. It's all in the Bible. Okay. I'm sorry. Where's feed the? Feed the hungry. Feed the hungry. Feed the hungry. Feed the naked. That's another book I'm reading.
I noticed that religion plays such a large part in a lot of your sketches.
Yeah, it does.
Is that just because of childhood background, or is this something that you think really needs more emphasis in our society?
Well, people have often asked me, you know, why are you... I've asked myself this question. As the issues are debated in the country, Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, I've often said to myself, well, geez, I've always considered myself a Democrat and the liberal side of the Democratic Party, but why am I a liberal Democrat? And I used to think it was because I grew up in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And Massachusetts is a very democratic state, and it's a very liberal state, and there's a huge academic influence here. But I don't think at its core it's about the politics that I was grew up with. I think at its core, it is Catholicism and being raised as a Catholic. And I think at the very core of my soul, those are the values that I was instilled with. Social justice, peace, forgiveness, compassion, empathy, love. These are the things that have been instilled in me since I was a child. And as you go into the world, these are the values that you carry around with you. So if a political party is advocating those values in their platform, I'm going to gravitate towards those people in our society who advocate those values.
Mm-hmm.
If conservatives advocate those values, I'll gravitate towards conservatives. If liberals advocate those values, I'll gravitate towards liberals. What I've seen is liberals advocating those values much more than conservatives, even though conservatives talk much more about religion.
Mm-hmm.
Their actions and what they stand for and the policies they've tried to enact in this country don't reflect, in my opinion, Christian values as much as liberal Democrats do.
Mm-hmm.
Not always. There are exceptions, but on a whole, I think that's what I've deducted.
And the immigrant rights, for example, would be very much in line with religious precepts of feeding the naked and taking care of strangers and doing unto others as you would have others do unto you then.
Absolutely. Yeah. But where I think the Democrats and the liberals have been remiss, and I think conservatives are making this point, and correctly so, is accountability. You can't have porous borders with drugs and people trafficking and all kinds of illegal activity going on around, you know, that's not compassion.
Mm-hmm.
That's sloppiness. That's irresponsibility, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to have both. We need to have both compassion, accountability, and also just tightening up the ship. We got to know who's here and what they do. People have to check in when they come to the country. Just like you check in when you go to a health club or a school, you sign up, you know, or you buy an automobile. The same thing with the guns, the whole issue of guns. You know, I have no problem with hunters. Nobody in the Democratic Party has a problem with hunters or people who use guns for sports. We just want there to be laws so people who are not hunters and who have sinister purposes for the guns, the drug runners, the drug dealers of Central America and South America, and in this country, the trade in illegal arms is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we're trying to do. We're trying to tighten it up so we can have both. We can have the freedom, the right to bear arms. We can also have the sane and logical laws in place. So, again, people who are using the guns to literally murder people aren't getting them.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that we need more laws, or do we need better enforcement of laws that are
there
already
go.
In the book?
Better enforcement. And again, this is where I think liberals need to take... See, we need to, in my opinion, both sides need to listen to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think liberals need to listen to what the NRA and the conservatives are saying. Enforce the laws that are on the books. Okay, beautiful. What a great way to start. We don't need any more laws, but let's enforce them. But where we don't have laws, why can't we have federal gun control laws in this country?
Hmm.
Anyway.
Quote, liberals should listen to what the NRA is saying, unquote. Obviously, candidate Tinkle will have a hard time carrying Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. That's almost as bad as saying the State Department should listen to what the Palestinians have to say. But to get back to guns, here's what candidate Tinkle has to say about guns on airplanes.
And then you get onto the plane. There's still no protection on the plane, folks. They talk about arming the pilots, giving the pilots guns. I honestly think somebody in the plane should have a gun. I don't think the pilot. I don't think the pilot is the person that should have the gun. They already have a very important job. Okay? If they all of a sudden have to be involved in gunplay, who's flying the plane? Get back in your seat. Get back in your seat. Don't make me go back there. You son of a bitch. Hold the wheel, you. I said put that tray table up.
Yeah, and also, well, I noticed that, you know, for a liberal and a Democrat, you don't really come across as anti-gun as so many people who call themselves liberal do. Mm-hmm. You say gun sanity, definitely. But, you know, you're in favor of letting somebody on the airplane have a gun, just not the pilot, because he's got a very important mission to perform
right
back in the cockpit. One thing that struck me that I don't know much about is your creation, Damned in the USA, on art censorship. Mm-hmm. Is this another issue that engages you?
Well, when I was performing at the Edinburgh Arts Festival in Scotland in the early 90s, the arts and censorship issue was all the rage in America. And Jesse Helms and the National Endowment for the Arts and federal money going to art museums that had pictures that were, to the average person, offensive. You know, the bullwhip and the rectum and all this sort of stuff. The Mapplethorpe photo. So anyway, I was performing over in England, and Channel 4 and the BBC, I think it was, came to one of the shows and said, you know, we're making a documentary about art censorship in America. Would love you to be in it. And so I was in the documentary, and my commentary was then used in the film. So they filmed a concert with me, and then they cut it up and put it in the film. And the film won an Emmy in 1991, an international Emmy, the best arts documentary. And it was really exciting. So anyway, yeah, I mean, as a person who deals with freedom of speech, those issues have always been important to me. But also, there's responsibility with freedom of speech. Like, if you'll notice the whole thing about disinformation that's on the CD, about the bull detector. You know?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, Daniel Patrick Moynihan had a great quote. He said, you're entitled to your own opinion. You're not entitled to your own facts. And that's what I think is missing with the public airwaves. People are constantly throwing around their opinion as fact. Mm-hmm. And it's not being fact-checked. I just feel like if you're going to make a political statement on television, the station and the listening audience deserves at least to have the truth. And that's one of the biggest things that gets me about radio and talk shows is when people say, you know, the American people blank, blank, blank. And, okay, well, that might be true, but it might not be true. If the dropout rate is 25%, and that's a fact, great. Please, articulate it and shout it from the rooftops and the mountaintops. But if the dropout rate is 50% or 8%, then articulate those facts. And that's just one example. Just all I'm looking for is the truth of the situation. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear what we have driving the media is people's agendas and commentary disguised as gospel and fact. And it's just so damaging, I think, to the national discourse. Because you can make stuff up and you can put it on the air and there's no recourse. There's no punishment for it.
Mm-hmm.
When political candidates create ads, political ads, their ads need to be fact-checked. And there was a lot of fact-checking on the ads with factcheck.org and other groups and newspapers that were fact-checking it and bringing to light the statements that the candidates made either in a debate or in their ads.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need, and that's great. But there's no such scrutiny for partisan talk shows and guests on talk shows in the media. And I just think that we could all benefit if there were.
But there's something worse than swearing, folks, on television, and that's lying. Well, I worked at 60 Minutes, CBS, for 2 seasons, and I learned so much about the media, and I learned a lot about journalism. They fact-check everything that goes on the public airwaves. You couldn't just make stuff up and put it on television. I tried. They fact-check everything. Under a Tingle administration, I will implement journalistic standards for the public airwaves, radio, cable television, and network television. I will have a bull detector, okay, for the public airwaves. Fact-check everything that goes on. So if a person makes a political statement, you freeze the frame. You fact-check the information. If the information's accurate, you allow the tape to proceed. If the information is inaccurate, a little jingle comes on. Liar, liar, pants on fire. And a little bull trots out on the screen and takes a lap around the person's head.
This might be a good time to suggest that if anybody wants to find out more of what you're doing, perhaps even listen to some of it, perhaps even to purchase some of it, a good place for them to go would be your website for further information and for a schedule of local performances.
It's all at the website, jimmytingle.com.
Jimmytingle.com. Before you have to leave, could you give us a little idea of what your next project is going to be?
Right now, I'm trying to complete a film called The American Dream.
Hmm.
Jimmy Tingle's American Dream. And I'm very excited about that. That's going to be a lot of fun. And we're in the editing process right now.
This is shot in New England?
Yes. In Washington, D.C., in New York. And it has national appeal.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. It's about the American dream. It's about my career as a stand-up comic, what motivates me.
Mm-hmm.
It's about starting a theater here in Boston. And I think the appeal will be national and international. That's what my hope is. I think everybody can identify with aspiring to make progress in whatever your career is. I think most people can understand that trying to start a small business and the difficulties with that. Most people understand the trends that shape this country, that have shaped the country for the last, 400 years. So I'm looking forward to getting it all edited together.
And it's serious, not satire, then, I gather.
No, it's a combination of both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Jimmy. Really
Thank
appreciate
so much,
talking
Ken.
To you.
It was a great being on your show. Thank you so much for having me, and continued success with the great work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
We should let Jimmy have the last word here. But before we do, I remind you that New World Notes comes to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. You can hear it there and at many other fine stations. At least two other fine stations, anyway. WHUS in Storrs, Connecticut, and KRFP-FM, Radio Free Moscow. Plus, streaming on the Internet from all three stations and available on the World Wide Web for free listening, podcast, or download as you like. For more information, please go to http://newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest New England, this is Kenneth Doust, urging you to feed the naked, shout it from the mouthtops, make your SUVs to hunger and thirst after righteousness, beat your GBU-28 bunker busters into plowshares, let the Apaches return home from the occupied territories, and remember that the real exemplar of family values might not be some loudmouthed, rich OxyContin addict, but maybe that openly gay vegetarian down the street. Or even, God help us, some liberal Democrat from Massachusetts. Illigita by non carborundum, and please tune in again.
And I also grew up Catholic, which gave me a very strong religious and moral foundation to help me navigate the international waters. Now, the criticism of course, my Catholicism, it's already in the mix. You know, they're already asking questions. Well, Jim, Catholic, are you going to take your orders from the Pope? Are you going to take your orders from Rome, the Vatican? And I said, of course not. Like John F. Kennedy, when his Catholicism came into question, I'm going to take my mandate from the collective wisdom of the American people, because I am basically what is known as a cafeteria Catholic. Do you know what a cafeteria Catholic is? There's every religion has them. Cafeteria Jews, cafeteria Protestants, cafeteria Muslims, cafeteria Buddhists and Hindu. There are even cafeteria atheists. I'm not kidding you. They're basically people who identify with the group, okay? But in reality, they pick and choose what aspects of the faith that they actually adhere to. There are cafeteria atheists. They say they don't believe in God, would never invoke God's name, but if they think back to that first orgasm, oh, God. Now, so what I'm saying is this. As a cafeteria Catholic, that means, metaphorically speaking, I walk into a church, I grab a tray. Just like a cafeteria. And I start off down the aisle. What do we got over here? What do we have over here? A little holy water? Well, thank you very much. What do we got over here? Light a candle, make a wish? Not right now. What do we got over here? What do we got over here? Jesus Christ, the Son of God, born of the Virgin Mary, suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified for saying things like, love your neighbor as yourself. On the third day, rose from the dead. I love a good comeback. Give me little Jesus. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. What do we got over here? What do we got over here? God loves you unconditionally and will forgive you no matter what you've done in your life. No matter how many times you've done it. Give me some of that. Give me a little more forgiveness over here. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And what do we got over here? What do we got over here? No birth control, no condoms, no married priest, no women priest, no choice. No, thank you. Let me go over here.